Welcome to KBOO and the Olmo Variety Hour, Lauren Regan.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Jen.
Well, you are a defense attorney and director of litigation and advocacy at the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene, and you've been on the program before to discuss legal issues and social justice activism. So thanks for coming on today to talk about the jury decision on January 23rd in the trial of justice for Palestine activists related to the April 2024 Day of Action in Eugene last year. So there have been apparently 13 other trials so far, with two more trials scheduled. So what was different about this trial of Salam Yunus and Kay Anton, in addition to the being apparently the first not guilty verdict?
Yes, well, that was a positive change from the other trials. We really emphasized that this wasn't actually just an action in Eugene, that this was part of a global day of action that came as a result of a plea from the Palestinian people. It involved 82 cities, 19 countries on six different continents, and we really were able to testify to the jury regarding not only the reasons this day of action occurred, but also why the United States has a very unique role in trying to stop this genocide. The clients Salem and Kay were able to discuss with the jury that the US is responsible for almost 70% of the weapons and aid provided to Israel, perpetuating this genocide. And so the American activists were very successful in being part of this collective political movement where they blockaded weapons manufacturing facilities, numerous ports, and other transportation corridors that were being used to ship weapons to Israel, and really were able to at least temporarily disrupt that flow of weapons and war machinery. In Eugene, over 60 activists safely blockaded traffic on the Interstate 5 highway, while over 50 more people gathered on a bridge overpass adjacent to the blockade location, and they held signs and banners during, morning traffic. As a result, over 60 people were arrested and charged with state disorderly conduct charges. And as you mentioned, over a dozen of the cases went to trial. In each one, we attempted to use the necessity defense, which
Which
I know you and
that is
I are.
familiar with, right? Do
Yes, we are
about
kind
that
of national
strategy.
pros at that.
The judge apparently ruled that out in pretrial motions.
Correct.
Can you say a little about that and whether that was a loss for the defense or what the issues were there?
I think we were able to put on choice of evils hearings outside the jury in each of the cases. And that's where we had experts like the UN Special Rapporteur on Starvation and the Right to Food, Michael Fakhry. And we had Oxford professor Chaney Ryan testify on all of the international crimes that were being committed both by Israel and the United States regarding these war crimes and genocide. And Professor Stan Taylor also talking about the efficacy of civil disobedience, particularly in the war resistance context, and particularly with regard to student movements and the power of student movements historically, whether we're talking about the Freedom Summer, during the civil rights era or Vietnam War, or today when we're talking about Israel's war crimes and genocide.
That's one of the critical criteria that you've described of the necessity defense, that it's a moral argument for the necessity of an action to confront a more threatening problem than
Correct, that the
whatever
crime
harm.
charged is less serious than the crimes that they were fighting against, that they were protesting against. But the court repeatedly ruled that the actions of the Eugene activists were symbolic, and therefore, under Oregon law, that the choice of evils defense would not apply. And that was the basis for the denial. And even though I think that decision was very wrong and was based on this one particular Ninth Circuit case out of Arizona, That is what the court ruled. And so we were stuck with that. But at trial, each defendant was able to take the stand on their own behalf and really almost repeat the testimony that they provided during the choice of evils defense. So we weren't able to put on the heavy hitter experts, but each defendant and some of their co-defendants were able to really eloquently inform the jury about what was at stake, what they did, why they did it, et cetera, et cetera. And I think for Salem and Kay, not only were they able to tell the jury very passionately about what was at stake and why they did what they did, but both of them, Salem is Palestinian American. He has family in Gaza and in Palestine. And Kay has family in Beirut, Lebanon, including a cousin that's an emergency room doctor. And they talked about how every day of their lives, they live their day fearing that their loved ones will be killed by Israeli airstrikes. And what it feels like to walk around a normal day with that on your heart and know that your people, your homeland, your family is literally being erased forever by a genocide. The land that you are attached to, the land that they had both been to and had visited is never, ever going to be the same. And I think that that testimony, in addition to all of the other stuff, really had an impact on the jurors. We were able to make some factual and legal defenses, of course, as well, which provided the jury with a roadmap to be able to find the defendants not guilty. And after about an hour and a half of deliberations, they came back with a unanimous not guilty verdict for both of them.
So the trial setting and perhaps the coverage of it allow the stories that have been so excluded or minimized or repressed by the dominant medium to be center stage, the story of these two people, protesters who had such a deep personal tie to the losses and the violence. But is there some risk of relying on personal connection to the genocide in terms of that? Whether activists who are in solidarity with the Justice for Palestine movement, who are not personally affected by their pan in terms of their own family, but still have a moral obligation to act. Jewish Voice for Peace makes that argument that they feel a personal responsibility as Jews to stand up against many of the claims of the Israeli propaganda machine and the US government. But are there costs to relying on a personal connection to have your claims prevail in court?
Well, in this case, both of them did have deep personal connections, and that's why they testified to it. And I think that was totally appropriate. In general, I would say that when you are taking your political case to a jury, you need to build trust with those jurors and you need to connect with them. It's very difficult for a normal person to understand why someone would get up on a Monday morning and risk being arrested and criminally prosecuted. Often activists need to bond with jurors in order to be relatable to them so that empathy, can ensue and some understanding. And, I think that it is often important for activists, regardless of their background, to really be able to tell the story of why they took the risks to their liberty that they did, why it was earnest and serious, why they, tried everything else before resorting to breaking the law, and why breaking the law was justified under the circumstances, particularly when you are talking about a genocide. More than any other issue, perhaps, that we have dealt with in modern history, the fact that there is a genocide, a declared genocide happening around the world that we are 70% responsible for, in my mind, is of an entirely heightened and more serious caliber. Like when you think back to, other war crimes and atrocities that have occurred historically, like what would have happened if Americans had just stayed in front of social media, or played video games and just not have been engaged or not have educated their neighbors or not have really shown how deeply resentful and, resistant to the actions of their own government, they really were. I think that is incredibly important when we're talking about global solidarity and particularly regarding genocide.
What were some of the critical dilemmas? Because as you just said, there's important form of solidarity and shared trust and commitment in taking risks that knowing the full weight of the law can come down on people, and some people are more vulnerable before the law than others. What were some of the dilemmas or choices that activists made around taking that action?
Well, as one of the lawyers, I was not necessarily privy to those conversations, but what I would say is that all 60 plus defendants agreed to engage in collective defense, where one of the goals of their forced engagement with the legal system was that they would ensure that the more vulnerable folks in their group would not be left behind or were not left to face more serious consequences than others. And in the Lane County Circuit Court case, they were actually really tested on that, where everyone was initially offered a diversion agreement from the district attorney's office, except for two people. And one of the two people was Solemn, this 19-year-old Palestinian American college student. And over 30 defendants in solidarity with Solemn and this one other person, instead of taking the diversion agreement where they could have just basically got it dismissed from the record, they all set their cases for individual jury trials. And so we had over 30 cases that were set for individual jury trials while myself and others attempted to lobby and negotiate the DA's office to simply offer diversion to everyone. And the DA's office refused. And so that's why we saw so many of these cases going to full jury trials with choice of evils hearings in advance of them, using up far more judicial resources than would have been needed if the DA's office simply offered a diversion agreement to Solemn and this one other person. And there really were no justified reasons for the state to refuse to offer diversion to Solemn and that other person.
But that's a real critical part of this process, you're saying, the
Yes.
making deals with people, and can be very divisive and destructive in social movements as people make different deals and you have forms of solidarity breaking down.
Yeah, and that's why it was such a celebration that in the end, the one person who was not offered a diversion agreement and was in part why so many jury trials occurred in this, in these cases, ended up being acquitted by a jury of their peers. I hope that this will be something that our district attorney's office will reflect on in the future. And just, everyone, all of the co-defendants were, it made it worth it for them that, Solemn was acquitted in the end.
So the spirits, it sounds like the spirits among the activists who've been through all this year are kind of buoyed by the decision and that they've been able to hold together as a group in some way.
Yes, I think so. I think they have shown and remain in solidarity with each other.
You've been doing this work in the Civil Liberties Defense Center for a long time. You're involved in Standing Rock. I've met you many places through filming myself out in the field in the courtrooms with work around climate justice, particularly the civil disobedience and the use of the necessity defense, supporting activists who want to go that route, the Black Lives Matter movement. Is there anything new you're seeing legally? I mean, some of what we're seeing around the country legally is, of course, right out of the usual playbooks. Is there anything you see different in the legal tactics or the degree of repression of activism with the Justice for Palestine movement?
Well, I mean, I would just say generally that with this incoming, authoritarian Trump regime, we're seeing unprecedented demand for CLDC and Know Your Rights trainings and legal support. And we are bracing for the, soon to be direct impacts on people and communities from the incredible levels of state repression that we know are already happening and, are going to be getting worse. With regard to justice for Palestine specifically, I hope that the ceasefire holds. I hope that the need for people to go to jail and risk their liberty in order to end our complicity in this genocide, is over. But I am no naive human being looking at the writing on the walls. And so just today, actually, we defended US Campaign for Palestinian Rights in a slap suit that was filed in Chicago in federal court in Illinois.
Can you just say briefly what a slap suit is?
Sure, it's called a strategic lawsuit against public participation. It's basically a frivolous lawsuit that is meant to shut down dissent and derail a political campaign. And in this case, it was basically a Zionist dream come true, filed a federal complaint against a bunch of different Palestine human rights organizations and activists. And this morning in federal court, the judge dismissed our clients with prejudice, which means that they were dismissed from the case quickly, before we even had to file a piece of paper, basically. And the plaintiffs in the case are not able to drag them back into the lawsuit.
That was a victory.
That was a major victory.
It's
Yeah,
not
because in
always
slap
clear when
suits,
you hear lawyers describing the minutiae
I mean,
of
slap
the law. Okay,
suits,
good thing.
it's weird because in slap suits, the plaintiff is the bad guy, which, that's not normally the way it is for us. But, and then our clients, are made to be defendants. And so, similar to the criminal defense work we do, the number one goal is to get them dismissed as soon as possible so their time and their resources and their work is not derailed or put on ice because they're in expensive federal litigation. So, in the Palestine context, we have been seeing a lot of slap type civil cases trying to suck up the capacity and resources of these organizations that are focused on Palestinian human rights work around the country and around the world. In the criminal context, we've really seen sort of like it really depends on location. Different jurisdictions have been handling cases very differently. Some jurisdictions like ours, even when people were convicted, they got community service, as the punishment. In other places, like in New Hampshire, there were some folks that blockaded a weapons manufacturing facility and they got, I think, 30 or 60 days in jail. So it's been a real mixed bag in terms of how the courts have treated Palestinian human rights activists thus far. And I can't imagine that things are going to get better, sort of with unchecked fascism and authoritarianism leading the charge at this moment.
So, in concluding, how can listeners learn more about your important work? And you've been known for years for Know Your Rights trainings. They've been so important in arming. It's like sex education, the schools, safe sex. It's like safe activism. How to go
Or
out
safer.
and safer. It's a continuum, but. Because you've made this point that I've found really wise and persuasive before, that if people don't know their rights, they tend to pull back on the conservative side of the law. And so
Yeah, like they self-censor
you self-censor
themselves.
and it's inhibiting. So I think that's an important principle behind what you do. How can people learn more? You have a website, but are there specific
Yeah.
trainings or programs coming up?
Yeah, I mean, we CLDC.org is our website, and on it we have a webinar library with dozens of different Know Your Rights and Risks trainings for street protests, for disabled activists, for immigrants and allies. We just did that one last week, and that is going to be publicly available widely, within the next couple of days. So definitely would steer people there. We also have a number of other resources, Know Your Rights brochures in Spanish and English and for youth. And we have a big digital security program, how to keep your tech safer, how to keep your cell phone safer, how to basically engage in this surveillance landscape with that little snitch in your pocket, which is your cell phone, and
While at the
how
same
to.
time maintaining solidarity and the relationships of trust that are so important in a movement.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. There are definitely ways to do all of it in a safer way. You just have to take yourself seriously and put in the time to learn some very basic ways to armor yourself and your community against state repression.
Well, Lauren Regan, thank you so much for being on the Omal Variety Hour here in KBOO this morning. Congratulations on that not guilty verdict, that and your important part in that, and the activists themselves. And we look forward to having you on the show again.
Thank you, Jen.
And
Appreciate it.
keep up the good work.
Thank you.